Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today with me here on Tell Del Tuesday is Greg Shockey out of San Antonio. Greg's been with us before. He's been a member for about 10 years. What's interesting about Greg is that he was a very successful senior VP or senior president or vice president of Shell Corporation, and in that position, he was very successful. Coming out of that kind of a high-end corporate job, you wonder what would drag him into something like real estate investing. We want to find that out today and also find out, as a high exec, was he able to replace that income doing real estate investing on his own. So, Greg, welcome to the show, and look forward to the conversation today. It's been a while.
Hey, just one quick correction. I was a general manager that reported to VP, so I was never a VP or a president, but I was pretty high up.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I gave you too much credit. Well, at least I didn't insult you, right? At least it didn't go the other way.
That's true.
All right. So let's start at the beginning. You had a successful career at Shell, and what made you decide you wanted to get out of that and go on your own and do something different?
I mean, I had a very expensive divorce, so I probably didn't realize the level of wealth I had until I, you know, spent a few million bucks to get divorced. And I was tired of working in corporate America, and it was just, you know, I wanted to do something else. And so I did some high-end consulting on, you know, mergers and acquisitions for a couple of years. And I had my wealth was all in the stock market, which I like a lot, but I did not want all of my money there. And the thing I liked about real estate was, hey, you know, it's not as correlated to the stock market. I like paying capital gains as opposed to ordinary income tax. And I thought, in 13, the setup was still pretty good. I missed the bottom by about 3 or 4 years, but it was still a hell of a run, and I made millions and millions of bucks thanks to Lifestyles.
Well, it's good to hear that we had that kind of success together as a group. And you did come in at about the middle of the hill, as opposed to coming at the very bottom in 2008. But you've ridden it all the way through to the peak. And now we've gone through the peak and we bottom out on the other side, coming back down the mountain. So you've lived through a complete cycle now, right?
The good news is, having worked for Shell for so long, I went through multiple booms and multiple busts. So in 21 and 22, I sold about a third of the deals I was involved in. And, you know, so at the peak, I probably had 30 some odd passive investments. I'm down to like 20. And hey, I'm invested in a lot of good lead investors. So am I making what I used to make? No, but I'm not losing money. I still have cash flow, and you know, I like multifamily, but you know, my houses, when I joined Lifestyles, I bought houses thinking I just buy them, hold them for a couple of years and get rid of them. And instead I just basically have a strategy on houses that I keep them forever and just refinance them whenever it makes sense. I mean, I think single family is the greatest single asset class on the face of the planet. And I trade lots of different things.
I have to agree with you on that. The multifamily has made me millions of dollars also. When you have the opportunity to get into the market where the market is either available to just do what we do, or if the market happens to be going up, which is just blind, dead, stupid, easy to make money. But in just a normal market like it is right now, we can make tons of money in the apartments. But the single families, they don't ever go away. So I'm glad to see that you're still enjoying your homes also and your duplex. So let's talk a little bit about when you came in here. What was your first thoughts? I mean, obviously you're very skilled at investing. You've got a lot of experience.
It really comes down to, my father was a very successful investor. And what he taught my brother and sister and I was, you guys are really pretty smart, but when you get into a tight subset when you're trying to make money, find the people that are smarter than you and piggyback on that knowledge as quickly as you can, and it will be a much easier road to make money. don't rely on totally yourself. So I actually was part of another group for a very brief moment in time, as was a friend of mine. And when I walked in there, I was like, I'm already smarter than all these people. How's that going to help me make money? Well, when I went to Expo in Houston years ago and then went to a meeting in San Antonio, I realized there were a couple people here that were smarter than me. And that's where I needed to be. And so that's why I joined. I mean, I could have figured it all out on my own, but it would have taken longer. I would have made more mistakes.
That's a beautiful thing. I was talking about that yesterday on the radio about how smart people look for mentorship. Dumb people try to figure it out on their own, you know? And you don't make the mistakes that you don't have to redo the mistakes other people have done. You get right to where you want to know. And what I think is even better, Greg, is there's many times in a new process, whatever it is I'm picking up and trying, that you don't even know what you don't know. So you don't even know the right questions to ask, right?
And I was fortunate that, you know, I'd moved to San Antonio, and it's a great office in San Antonio, and there was a lot of great lead investors and some smart passes. And so it enabled me to make a lot of money relatively quickly. I mean, I could see that my philosophies on certain things were right. I fine-tuned a few things. Like, the average person doesn't buy the kind of houses that you tell people to buy. Like, my wife would have wanted better, nicer houses, and I would have invested more money and made less profit, you know? And so by buying the types of houses that you recommend and the way you recommend doing it, hey, I didn't buy those other houses. And every house I've bought has been fantastic.
Are you still buying houses?
No, I'm 66. I'm getting older and lazier. So I don't sell what I have. And I have a partnership with, you know, Trish and Chris Mattson in Savannah, Georgia, where we have some houses. I am kind of looking for a couple fourplexes right now because I have a bank that will finance me 95% if my partner will live in the fourplex for a year and a day. And so I am looking for a couple fourplexes, but the trick is I can find the ones that make me good money, but not necessarily in the neighborhood that I want my partner to have to live in for a year. So not really buying single family homes, but I am looking for a couple fourplexes. And, you know, I think I'll look for another lead deal later this year. I want the probability stack to be a little bit more in my favor. I've sold both my lead deals about a little over 2 years ago. So I've been vacationing hard for the last 2 years. Well, actually the last five, but this year I'm going for a record 18 weeks of vacation.
It's not bad. Let me ask you these questions because the beginners, you know, they'd like to know what somebody's done it, looking back, would say to these questions because I ask these all the time. The first question is it the horse or the jockey? Is it the deal or the lead investor that's most important in a deal?
I mean, the lead investor is by far the most important thing. I always say when I look at my analytics, the highest correlation to success is the lead investor. And I mean, I look at the debt and I look at the asset and I probably buy more Bs and stuff than I used to buy Class B assets and apartments than I used to. And, I'm older. But, a great lead investor can take a deal that's having problems and turn it around. Okay, or take a good deal and make it great. And a weak lead investor can screw up a good deal. And so, you know, the way I invest now, I wouldn't recommend to most people, but I have a lot of experience. So my portfolio is very concentrated around a handful of lead investors. Now, it wasn't that way when I started. But, lots of things matter, but my view is I don't care how much I like the asset and everything else. If I'm not in on the lead investor, I don't spend any time looking at it.
Got it. Pretty clear.
And even though I think this is a tough multifamily market right now, I still dropped $250,000 last month on a deal, but it was a fantastic lead investor that's 3 for 3. It was a fantastic submarket, and the seller was an ex-lifestyles person that had so much stuff that the rents basically were $200+ a month below where they should be. So, you know what? Even in a tough market, every once in a while, there's a gem, and I'll take a good setup, and I hit that one hard.
Gotcha.
And I'm very comfortable with it.
Leads me to my next question. Diversification from state to state. Do you believe in that, or doesn't matter where it's at?
For me, I'm not a big believer in it. I believe that the core metrics in different places can be better. But I think part of my success is, you know, I understand the submarkets that I invest in. I really understand the lead investors that I invest in. So for me, I think I can achieve better returns operating in the markets that I operate in. But clearly, there are places that probably have a little bit better operating metrics. So, you know, if I wasn't in Central Texas, where there's a lot of investors and I see them on a regular basis and I understand the markets and I know a lot of the brokers, I'd probably be much more diversified than I am.
Okay. Let's talk about size of deals. Have you recorded any opinion on whether you should do small deals, medium deals, or large deals?
Don't like deals that are super big.
Give me a number.
I mean, I'm probably going forward. It's probably going to be rare that I'm going to invest in an asset that's more than 225 or 50 units.
Okay.
You know, I just think the complexity of managing that type of asset, not for me as a passive, but for the lead, I think it's a whole different animal. And, you know, I've kind of found that the stuff that's around 100 units has tended to perform really, really well. And some of the small stuff performs exceptionally well. But, you know, I mean, I like investing in first and second time leads, you know, but I won't deploy as much money in those deals because there is more risk. But sometimes the rewards are phenomenal. My little 32 that I was a lead investor in, I mean, the passives made 445% profit.
Yeah, I found that the small deals and the first time leads have some positivity to them from the fact that the first-time leads are definitely out there trying to prove themselves. They're working a lot harder at what they're doing. And number two, it's a small deal. They want to,
unless you're a good first-time lead.
They also want to get it over with. You know what I mean? They want to get in, get out, and get that capital gains and move on to the larger property where they have a better management team. And so I've seen a lot of positivity to small deals in that situation. So we tend to agree there. Regional, you've already discussed that. Size, lead, or deal metrics. Okay, all those work. About 1 minute left in this segment. What other variable am I not bringing up that should be considered when looking at deals?
I try not to be very invested in leads that have more than four properties.
Good point. Yeah, I found that there's a massive amount of deal fatigue once a person gets up over three deals. I agree. There's massive deal fatigue once a person gets past a certain number of deals and they start spending less and less time with each one and so on and so forth in that scenario. In fact, rapid acquisition. Let's discuss that when we come back, because if there's any one thing that I've seen people go down from, it's been rapid acquisition. We'll talk about that when we get back. We'll be right back with Greg Schottky and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
To creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Lifestyles Unlimited member Lisa on how our educators and mentors share their knowledge.
The whole Lifestyles Unlimited team is just wonderful, and all the people in it is basically copying what I do so you could be successful.
Lifestyles Unlimited. Over 33 years teaching the real estate retirement roadmap. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297 and save 60%. Lifestyles Unlimited. Text radio to 88007.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Greg Shockey out of San Antonio. Greg has been with us as a member for over 10 years and has done quite well for himself, made self-proclaimed multi-millions of dollars out of doing this, and very high rates of return on some of the deals. Two full cycle deals, I'm reading this, return one of them at 445% return, the other at 152% return. Were those the ones where you were lead investors in them?
Yeah, I was the lead on both those deals. One deal was my first deal. I never planned to be a lead, but I said, I'll buy this thing so I really understand the business from the inside. And then I got trapped because it was making so much money, I didn't want to get rid of it. And then I was a passive in a deal with Bob DeLong down the street, and he made us a bunch of money. And I said, well, it's close by. You know, it's a great property. So I bought it, too. And, you know, it was, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, kind of a funny story is the first passive deal I got into, I end up losing some money. And my wife thought, well, this is terrible. We got to get out of this. Well, I made close to $1 million on that 32 and close to $800,000 on the second lead deal. So it would have been a real shame to exit, you know, after losing, I don't know what I lost, maybe $12,000. Can you imagine losing $12,000, giving up, stop going, and not get $1.8 million on the other two deals? It would have been sad. But, you know, the thing was, I realized I was invested in a bad lead investor on the first deal. And I said, I still think the business thesis is good. And I was watching other deals that were successful. And I said, you know what? I've got to go back to my roots in analyzing people more than spreadsheets. And when I did that, you know, my first 18 full cycle deals have a simple IRR of over 28% a year per deal. And that includes three deals that I lost a little bit of money on, the first deal and I guess the two and one other one. I mean, I have two deals that I'm in right now that I've been in for 8 years. I've already pulled out 200% of what I put in. I still make double-digit cash-on-cash returns and still have a ton of equity in those deals. They're not my deals. I'm a passive in that deal. But, I mean, what a wonderful situation.
Speaking of bad leads, what is your thought on rapid acquisition?
It's terrible. This is a very hard business to scale, okay, beyond a certain level, okay, because you like the money. It's, you know, when you're small, you can be more hands-on. I've just not seen a lot of people successfully scale to a massive level, and part of it is, I think when I worked at Shell, you know, I ran multiple states and stuff, and I had high-paid people that worked for me, and you could demand a lot, and if they didn't perform, you got rid of them and got somebody else that wanted that job. But it doesn't work as well in this business. And so also, like you said, there's only 24 hours in a day. And if the lead is really the secret sauce, the more properties they have, the less amount of time they have to dedicate to each property. So I'm just not a big fan of it. I mean, I'm sure somebody's able to do it, but the statistical probability of success is not great. And I'm a big probability guy. I always want to be on the side of a good probability.
Well, here's a bad probability. Of the few lead investors that have gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over the 34 years we've been doing this, every single one of them have been rapid acquisition guys. I call it the Midas touch. They believe that whatever they do turns to gold, and maybe the first two or three do, and then after that, they just all go to pot. Or sometimes they just go so fast that they've never even really solidified even the first one or second one. And by the time they get to the third or the fourth or the fifth, they don't have any of them under control, and they just totally fall apart. So, yeah, rapid acquisition's naughty word in my house. It just doesn't go over very well at all. When you looked at being a lead investor, what was your thoughts about that? I mean, was it enjoyable? Miserable. It's work. You're back working again.
It's work. I didn't want to be a lead investor. I just wanted to have an in-depth understanding of the business that I didn't think I could get as a passive, because I knew I was going to deploy a lot of money. Okay. And so I'm kind of the accidental lead. I went in to learn about the business, which I did. And then I got trapped because it was pretty profitable and I didn't want to give it up for a while. And I think I'm planning to do another lead deal, you know, so probably in the next year, you know, but it'll be tough because I probably won't make quite as much money and have to work, you know, harder, hopefully somewhat smarter. But I don't ever see myself having more than one or two lead deals ever. But that's just me. I mean, because I really love investing passively. I mean, there is nothing better than to make a good decision, write a check, and do nothing and have money come to you every quarter.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, that's the best money you're ever going to see in your life.
The worst problem that you can have is figuring out which deposit came from which property, right?
Well, the great thing now is, you know, most people don't even send checks. They just ACH.
When you get ACH money, you go, like, what is that there for? And you have to think it through and go, oh, okay, yeah, that's that group of people. You know, especially if you have 50, 60, 70 of them like you have had. Just remember the names of the properties or the names of the LLCs that send you the checks. It's got to be a difficult thing to keep track of. I mean, that's such a terrible thing to have to do. I mean, I don't know if anybody could stand it.
It's a champagne problem.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a technical question because you brought it up. Please define for people what IRR means. And I know it's internal rate of return, but what does that really mean when you're throwing that out at people?
Okay, so you put X, let's say you put $100,000 in the deal and you get cash on cash, you know, you get distributions quarterly, you might pick up a refinance along the way, then you sell the property. So, you know, my average hold period has been about 4.4 years. And, you know, I've, in the first 18 deals, I think I invested like $2 million and pulled out 2.2. I don't have the sheet in front of me. So I just divide that, you know, the amount of money profit that I made by the number of years I was averaging the deals. And that gives me it's a very simple one. I don't time weight mine and make it super complicated. It doesn't add enough value to do the extra work. Okay. So basically it means in those 18 deals, on average, there was 28% return per year, you know. Now, I didn't make 28% every year. Obviously, I made a lot of money at the end or on a refinance, but that's pretty good return.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's as a passive, because two of those deals, I was a lead and made a lot of other money, but I don't include that in the calculation.
So people to understand this, the money you're saying coming out, you put in $2 million, you pulled out 2.2, that's not what you're actually saying.
Pulled out 4.2.
You pulled out 4.2.
$2 million back and $2.2 million in profit. And those are just the deals that have closed. I've got 20 other deals that are still active.
Yeah, there's really no way, and this is what I always tell people, there's really no way to actually calculate internal rate of return until you've actually sold the property. You could make 100% return in cash flow over 5 years and then sell it for 100% loss and have made nothing, right?
Luckily, I've never had that situation.
No doubt. Greg, as we end up this last segment here, I was going to ask you a question. Just sort of throw this at you and let you play with it a little bit. The preface point before we start the question is Warren Buffett stated the other day, I saw he was interviewed, and he said, you know, the problem with Berkshire Hathaway is that it's hundreds of billions of dollars and it's like a giant dinosaur. You can't make it move. You can't make big moves. You can't invest that much money and find enough really great deals to buy with that much money to keep the rate of returns high. He said, if you gave me $1 million, that's what he's saying now. If you gave me $1 million, I could make 100% return with it, I guarantee you, just $1 million. So we go back to the conversation you and I had, which was the big deals are just behemoths that just don't move. Large, overstuffed portfolios where guys have 4, 5, 6, 7 properties just don't move. That little nimble, you know, 50 to 100, 150, 200 unit investment, compare that to the ability. In other words, could you ever go to the stock market and say, hey, I want to make 144 or 455% like you made on these other deals? Would that ever happen? Or is that just the very nature of what Warren's saying, the size of these deals makes it possible? What's your thoughts on that?
Real estate is a much better place to deploy capital on a scalable basis. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how
it does.
Look at it.
It makes a lot of sense And that's why I ask you, because I don't diversify into the stock market. I stay away from it. I don't like anything that I don't have control of. And I put
control the market. I mean, I've had some really good years, but even in some of those really good years, this my highest conviction stuff wasn't the stuff that did the best, you know. And so that lack of control, I don't want a massive amount of money deployed in that manner.
We're going to go the other direction and finish up the last couple minutes here, and that is, tell us how you decide what to do with your life now. What does this typical day, week, month, year look like for you?
Well, I mean, you know, I spend a little bit of time looking at the stuff early in the morning, you know, the different, you know, properties and investments that I have. But, I mean, really, it's planning. I just got back from Cabo Saturday night, and I flew to Sarasota, Florida yesterday afternoon. And, you know, I think one thing I do still do is I do still network with the different people. I think one thing a lot of people got away from during COVID was, you know, everything was online and you didn't have to meet anybody. I still think there's tremendous power and value into doing feasibility studies and going to the multifamily rides and that kind of stuff. I mean, I think you can be a much better educated investor face-to-face. At least that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, really, it's about planning what I'm going to do to enjoy my life. I don't spend that much time on the real estate. My single-family homes, I haven't had anybody move out in 4.5 years, so obviously I haven't done many rehabs. You know, I'm invested with pretty good lead investors, so I don't spend a lot of time poring over all the reports. I mean, I pore over the reports if things aren't going well. Well, you know, 18 of my 20 deals are still really solid, and, you know, I don't spend a lot of time. Now, you know, when I start looking for another property to be a lead, then I've got to get a lot more engaged and look at a lot of real estate and look at a lot of stuff and deals. But, you know, really the last couple of years has been really focused on enjoying my life more than working by any means. And that's why I'm trying to get my nephew who just graduated from SC, I'm actually buying him the 2-day course and everything to go through, because I want him to get in the business, because one, I want to deploy money through him. And as I tell him, like, I wish I would have known this when I was 22 years old, you know, instead of getting in when I'm 54 years old.
There's no doubt. That's quite an advantage. You think about the compounding value of money. Woo.
Yeah. I mean, I had a good career and I made a lot of money, but I've made a lot more money every year I've been in lifestyles than I did. And as I tell my nephew, you know, I made a ton of money, but you work your butt off for that money. Okay. I mean, they're not giving you that money because they're generous. You know, they expect a lot. And so I'd much rather make a lot of money and work a lot less.
Yeah. That's why I've said 34 years ago, I called it Lifestyles Unlimited and not Del Wamsley's real estate program, so that I could constantly tell people it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Because retiring at 34 years of age, I got it, man. Life changed. Working 60, 80 hours a week down to 4 or 5 hours a week, it changed the whole thing for me. Well, Greg, I want to appreciate you coming on again and sharing its 10 years after view of what it's like to have gone through it all. And thank you very much for coming on and for helping us with every way, shape you do, and you're out there networking with everyone. The rest of you out there, remember this. It's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Wamsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.